Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Joining us on our international news review today, Steve Okun, the senior advisor, McClarty Associates. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, GVZ.
How you doing today? Everything all right at home?
Same thing that it was yesterday and the day before that.
And we'll continue
and
to
tomorrow
be.
Tomorrow and the next day.
Exactly. All right, Steve, that lightness aside, there's a really, really big story in that just broke late last night and yesterday about arrests in Hong Kong of key former legislators, the publisher Jimmy Lai, people that the police are saying were all involved in some of those pro-democracy protests last year. Interesting timing. There were 14 people that were arrested across the island yesterday.
Yeah, and you know, and they ranged in age from 24 to 81. And it's a sign that will governments take action, like the Chinese government in this case? Certainly the U.S. would have protested and protested vigorously to have so many activists rounded up. But the U.S. is completely and utterly focused, of course, on the coronavirus. So what is the State Department going to say? Is President Trump going to say anything about his, good friend President Xi? Or is he going to let this go? And if Hong Kong's on lockdown, will there be protests, which there certainly would have been had this occurred, a few months ago, 6 months ago? So it's a sign that we don't know all of the political changes that the coronavirus is going to bring, because there's so many unknown factors, but the political risk is off the charts right now.
There is no indication from the Hong Kong police why they chose this particular moment to make these arrests yesterday. Of course, it was during the day on Saturday, which was late on a Friday night in the U.S., and as you rightly mentioned, people are distracted there with other things. It does seem like a fairly well-planned, in terms of the timing, to do it at this particular moment while everyone is so focused on other things.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, are governments going to take advantage and do things that they could not have done otherwise because of the pandemic and the focus everybody else has? There's no rule that says, governments only get to deal with one crisis at a time. You could have multiple crises going up, and what is the U.S. going to do? We know what the U.S. would have done had this been a year ago or 6 months ago, but we just don't know what it's going to do today. And is this going to embolden other governments to take actions they might not have otherwise been able to do due to outside pressure from the United States or the EU or the UN or whoever it might have been?
Yeah, very interesting. Of course, we'll wait and see. They have not been detained. It's my understanding that those Hong Kong former legislators and others will appear in a magistrate's court. I think it's a month from now. I think the 18th of next month. So they are not, I believe, currently in jails anywhere. But interesting that they are now being brought in on those charges. So we will certainly follow that story and look to see if, in fact, the U.S. and other countries do make some sort of statements about that. Let's move on to the U.S. There's so much happening, of course, there. And you've had some experiences this week where you're talking to business leaders around the region here, and much of what they're saying kind of dovetails into what's going on in the U.S. right now.
No, it's exactly the balance that every government is trying to figure out, is how do you get the economy up and moving? How do you save people's jobs? How do you get people, how do you save businesses from going into utter collapse? But you have to protect the health and lives of your citizens. And there is a tension right now between doing both of those things. And you're seeing it play out in real time in the United States, where one day Trump is saying, we're going to have all of these measures in place and we're going to have very strict recommendations and guidelines for when you can open up the economy. And then the next day he tweets out, liberate Virginia, liberate, Minnesota, liberate Michigan. And so he's just whipsawing back and forth. In Singapore, they, of course, are keeping to their very strict 30-day circuit breaker and then deciding what's going to happen next. But other governments don't have that discipline or the ability to have that discipline. And so that's what's going to go on in every government. Do you open up? When do you open up? How do you open up? That's all the things we have to look at right now.
We've already seen that Vermont and Texas will open certain businesses on Monday, and then it is expected that Montana will do something similar next Friday. So they are already starting to talk and to, you know, make moves toward opening up. It will be interesting to see if then we see a second or subsequent waves of COVID-19 come back and hit those particular states that are reopening.
And that's the real fear that you have in the stock market that has all its gyrations. You know, sure, you're going to open up and then the market can go up. But what happens when that second wave hits? Is it going to make it even worse that people will now not have the ability to trust what the government's actions are, because it'll show the government didn't know what it was doing? And you have, you know, the governor of Michigan, who, you know, I think is a very highly likely possibility to be Joe Biden's vice presidential pick. She is hanging tough, and her restrictions in Michigan are probably as close to you have in the U.S. to Singapore as any other state. And she is getting vilified for it from the right and with all of these protests, yet she's holding tough. And we'll see. Maybe this will work to her advantage politically, because it works to having the health and safety of her constituents first and foremost, as opposed to their economic concerns.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, it seems that in places, for example, in Singapore, where there's good financial stimulus package, in the U.S., of course, many people will be getting a $1,200 check at some point in time, which, of course, doesn't last very long these days, but at least it's something. It'll be interesting to see if that helps soften the need to stay away from work and to keep businesses closed, at least for a short amount of time, as with the other countries like Singapore that have had, you know, stimulus packages where money is going to people to help them weather that time out of work.
Well, and you have to have, like, everything comes down to testing. If you don't know where the virus is, if you don't know how many people have it, how can you make an informed decision about whether to open or not? And what's going to be really interesting to watch, and I tell my friends in the U.S., it's like, I'm living here in Singapore about a month ahead of you. I'm here. You either look to see what's happening here as your future. And what Singapore does come May 5, how much of the circuit breaker, if it gets relaxed at all, do they relax it in a small part? Do schools get open? Do schools stay closed? Do more businesses get considered essential? Do restaurants open but only at X capacity? I mean, it really is a roadmap for what you think the U.S. might do. And so that's really, I think, the critical date. And obviously, we're still a couple weeks away before finding out how Singapore is going to start to ease their restrictions.
Well, quite a number of governors in the U.S. have said, hey, look, we do need better and more widespread testing in place before companies can return to normal, as you just mentioned. Now, yesterday on Saturday, the president said, quote, our testing is getting better and better, unquote, but you know, didn't offer any concrete evidence. And by everything that I've seen, you know, yes, testing is happening at certainly a much greater rate than it was before, but it still is not something that everybody can get that needs it.
And it's more difficult than that too, because you can test somebody, but if you test them early in the timing, they could have COVID-19, but the test would still come back negative. So you get a false negative. So now you've tested this person, they have it, but the test comes back negative. You let them go out into the workforce, and then you get your second wave that way.
Yeah.
So that's where you have all of these issues around testing that need to get addressed, and it's not going to get addressed in the United States in the next week or 2 weeks. And so I just think that you can almost write off, you know, at least through Q3, maybe all of 2020 for now, in terms of any return to normalcy in the United States.
Yeah, this brings us to, you know, what your specialty is, which is consulting with businesses on how to forward plan. What are you telling them this past week? What are you going to tell them this week?
Well, what we're starting to look at now is, we are going to be in the pandemic era for the foreseeable future, because yes, once we get behind this one, maybe it's going to be 6 months, maybe it's going to be a year, maybe it's going to be 18 months. But what do you start thinking of going forward? For example, are you going to be set up for work from home from a cybersecurity perspective? Are you going to be set up for work from home where you could have an employee take screenshots of very sensitive company documents and then, you know, sell those. You don't have any way to protect against that. So how are you going to be thinking about in this new environment from a cybersecurity perspective? How are you going to be thinking about your supply chain? Because if you got a, if your supply chain is reliant on China now, is that a wise thing to do in an era of pandemics? People were starting to look at it when it came to tariffs, you know, and the trade war between the U.S. and China. But this is going to massively accelerate that. How do you think about all of these things going forward? How do you think about automation? Are you better to have a factory that has that's fully automated, because then you don't have to worry about, you know, social distancing in a factory? All of these things investors are just starting to look at now. Businesses need to start looking at. And so really that's what we're, you know, talking to businesses about now is be, how are you going to have to adapt in the era of a potential pandemic, even after this one gets out?
And of course, nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody has a roadmap. It's really just sort of best guess at this point, isn't it?
That's where we are right now. And the businesses that get in front of this, that are prepared to operate in a new environment, are the ones who are going to be better off. But then you also have a political risk element that you have to line up on it. Because when governments lose money, which they're all losing money now drastically from reduced revenues, they're going to need to make up that revenue elsewhere. So one of the things that, you know, is certainly a possibility is digital tax, because as things move online more and more and you have takeout, you have, you know, all of your retail going out of stores and onto online, you know, much faster pace. What is that going to do in terms of tax? What is that going to do in terms of your business? How is it going to get licensed? How is it going to get operated? You have that political element in addition to the business operational element you have to think about.
Yeah, let's close off this segment with some appointments. The president, of course, chastised Congress for not approving some of his picks for different positions, as threatening to do recess appointments and a whole chain of events there. What do we know about what's going on with these latest appointments that he wants to make?
Well, I'll do this very quickly. When the Constitution was written, you know, this was back in people were taking horse and buggies, and it would take months and months to get from your home in Illinois to Washington, or, you know, upper the deep south to Washington, D.C. So the Congress was often in recess. The president needed to appoint people. So the Constitution allows the president to appoint someone to a Senate confirmable position without going through the Senate if the Congress is in recess. So the Congress right now is refusing to go into recess. It's having these sessions where it goes every day, and now the president can take advantage of that. And he said, I'm going to declare Congress in recess, and then I'll appoint whoever I want without needing any Senate approval. And I don't care that this is constitutionally questionable. It really isn't. It's not constitutional at all. But he says, yeah, you can sue me later. And so this is the type of, you know, presidency Donald Trump sees, where he thinks he has, you know, much more authority under the Constitution than he does. And you're getting people appointed to positions who are totally unqualified. One into the International Civil Aviation Organization. He's going to put a 30-year-old son of a Fox News anchor into a position that's really critical, especially now.
We will see if that all comes to the fore. The good news is there's always something for us to talk about here on our International News Week News Review. Steve Okun, Senior Advisor, McLarty Associates, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, GBZ.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.